Welcome, everyone, to episode 404 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to keep talking about the NBA trade deadline. With the standing so clustered, it's hard to say how a lot of these teams are going to approach the deadline. So we're going to go into four teams in the West in particular and see what they should do. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is the biggest troll this side of the Western Hemisphere, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It is going well. What did I do to deserve that? Just one piece of trolling today. That's it.
Okay. Well, you did it on Twitter, and then just as soon as we signed on here as well, you just had to remind me. Just in case I didn't see the tweet, which I already sent an F you back.
Yeah, you did.
So, yes, we are recording early so I can watch Mikal Bridges have his revenge game against the Sixers today, which will be great. But Morten,
he would have looked so good for Philly, wouldn't he?
You know, we won't even get into it. I want to start with the Blazers, because I was watching them on Thursday. They beat the Sixers. They have so many guys out right now, especially Zach Collins is out indefinitely. Yusuf Nurkic is out for a while with the wrist. And then CJ McCollum is out at least a couple more weeks as well. So Gary Trent Jr. has been starting in place of CJ McCollum recently. And in those 10 games, Gary Trent Jr. is averaging 20 points, shooting 47.3% from three-point range.
Yep.
He is shooting better from three than he is overall, which is just wild. And this is on 9.1 three-point attempts per game. And it got me thinking, you know, I want to just right away say I get annoyed whenever the trade Ben, trade Joel framework comes up, and I know Blazers fans feel the same way about, you know, we have to break up Dame and CJ. It's like just been the common refrain for this team for, it feels like, the last 3 or 4 years. So I don't want to frame it like that, because, yes, I know they've got to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, but they are coming up to a point where, you know, Gary Trent Jr., if he keeps playing this well, he's going to be a restricted free agent this offseason. And I'm thinking, you know, they're going to have to shell out a lot of money to retain him if they want to. So with that in mind, it just got me thinking, like, if he keeps playing this well, should they pivot to him as their full-time starting two? And should they be at least entertaining offers for CJ McCollum, who was playing phenomenally well before he went down with his injury? He would have been a lock for the All-Star game if he didn't get hurt.
So sit back, Brian, because I have a very long analytical inclined to reply to you.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Why don't you think they should be at least entertaining offers?
Well, because why should they? Here's the problem, right? This is something we've been talking about with the Blazers for such a long time. They have always been so heavy in terms of their top tier talent, and they've like missed those additional guys, the extra depth, having like that third star or that third guy who can take care of the offense. Mm-hmm. Now that you finally found him, why would you want to trade, you know, the secondary piece to move him up a slot? The Blazers are in a position right now where they're actually, at least from an offensive standpoint, are looking very potent. Mm-hmm. That means less stress on Dame, less stress on CJ, who's, like you said, has just been on fire. I mean, we're talking about almost 27 points and 5 assists per game, which is, you know, bonkers. And 44% from downtown, by the way, on 11 attempts per game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. So the trio of Dame, CJ, and Gary Trent Jr., I think, can function together. Like, why not throw Gary Trent in the starting lineup, but then just as a three? I know that, you know, full disclosure, he's not a great rebounder or a playmaker. He's basically just a shooter on offense and a defender on the other way. He's like a poor man's Clay, if you catch my drift.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to give you great rebounding. He's not going to give you those extra stats. But does that matter? I don't necessarily think it does, right? I mean, if you have Dame, CJ, Trent out there as your 1-2-3, and they just keep, like, that trio could just get, what, 10 threes? More, actually, when you look at it. 10, 11 threes per game, and efficiently so. Like, that is just such a tremendous amount of attention that those guys would get, and hopefully that would mean Robert Covington could start actually hitting shots afterwards, off of the attention there. And then when Nurkic comes back, you know, you put him in the starting lineup, and then Enes Kanter comes off the bench and does his, like, double-double thing. You still have Carmelo Anthony. You still have Derek Jones. I'm running with this lineup. I can entertain certain offers. I can entertain maybe looking at what the market offers me for Anthony Simons. Mm. I would be willing to listen. I would also be willing to listen for Nasir Little. I actually like those two guys. I think they have a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's time to make sure that you get Dame into the best possible position to win, right? I mean, he's 30, if memory serves, 29, 30. It's time. Like, you can't rest on your laurels. If you have some young talent that has trade value, I think it's time to cash in and go for it. And then you could argue, well, Gary Trent Jr. is young as well. Yes, but he's productive. Like, he's already playing like a starter, so that's fine. You're not, like, what's the point of moving off of him at this point?
Yeah, so I have a couple of thoughts here. One, my concern with them is not fit-wise. I mean, I think you're right. They probably could fit all three of those guys in the starting lineup. Either put Derek Jones at the four or start Covington at the four would probably be what I would do, just for the defense. The offense would be nuclear. The defense is where I'd be concerned, just because you've got a 6'2 Lillard, a 6'3 CJ, and a 6'5 Gary Trent, 1-2-3. If you're going against a bigger wing, you could get in trouble there. But, I mean, maybe they'd be similar to the Nets, where it's just like they don't give a damn, really, about their defense if they can put up 140 a night. Or, as you said, those three guys alone could account for, you know, 10 to realistically 15 threes a night. Like, I don't think that's a hot take to say that on a certain night, if all three of those guys are hitting shots, they easily could knock down 15. So maybe that it's the defense for sure is the bigger concern in terms of, you know, how they would fit together in a starting lineup. But I'm more looking like a year or two down the line, or even this summer, because, you know, they've got Zach Collins will be a restricted free agent as well. Derek Jones has a $9.7 million player option. I don't know if he'll pick that up. I think that's right on the line of probably I can't tell either way at this point.
Yeah, I was expecting more from Derek Jones. You know, I was super high on him coming into this year as well. I voiced my opinion about him numerous times on this podcast. I was a little too optimistic, I think, because he's, I don't know if it's a fit question, like a fit issue, or he's just not ready yet. And if he's not ready yet, that concerns me because he's 23, I want to say.
Yeah, he is. Or he's actually turning 24 Monday.
In 2 days. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, see, that doesn't help. That doesn't help. I would have expected him to become something more than what he is right now. And, yeah, I mean, so if some teams out there is like, yeah, we still believe in him. We just think it's not the right system. And there's a trade to be had there. I would explore it.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you aren't sure whether he's going to pick up that option. Like, I think the bigger thing with the Blazers, and I'll get to it right now, actually. I mean, so they have those Collins, Jones, Gary Trent could all be free agents this offseason. Nurkic, Covington, Hood, all off the books after 2021-22. So my thinking with Trent is that, you know, if he's playing this well, I think $15 million a year is his floor this summer. And I think if teams are paying attention, like, a smart team would throw more at him. I mean, we could be talking a four-year, $80 million deal at this point. I don't. Yeah. I mean, again, I go back to Joe Harris. If Joe Harris is getting 475, I think Gary Trent's getting at least that, or he should.
Oh, for sure. No, he plays defense and he's younger. So yes, right. Yes. No, that's not to insinuate Joe Harris doesn't play defense, but what I'm saying is that Gary Trent is a significantly better defender, right, and has significantly higher upside as well. So yes, he would absolutely get that. Yeah. I would be floored if he didn't.
So you've got $70 million next year alone tied up in Dame and CJ, and then $75 million the year after that. You add, let's conservatively say, $15 million for Gary Trent, and that's just a lot of money tied up into those three players, such that if you lose Zach Collins, Derek Jones this offseason, or if you lose any of Nurkic, Covington, Hood next offseason, you won't have enough salary cap space to replace all of those guys. So you just have to kind of ask yourself, is this core good enough to win as is? Or, you know, if our goal is we know we're not on the Lakers tier, but we are a solid playoff team, we're a solid 50-win team, we're going to, you know, if the chips fall in a certain way like they did 2 years ago, we could make it to the Western Conference Finals, and then, hell, let's just try to outgun teams and see if this, you know, we can meet Brooklyn in the finals and we'll have a 170 to 168 finals game. Like, that might just be the play. It's certainly something. I don't think it's an easy decision either way, but if they do think Trent could take over in that full-time two role, it's just something that was in the back of my mind when I was watching that team. Like, they're very good even without their second-best player. Really, Nurkic is, you know, at his peak, he's their third best player. So they beat the team leading the East without two of their three or four best players because they were just going nuclear from three. You know, maybe given their longstanding issues on the wing, maybe try to flip CJ to address that deficiency if you're confident Trent could step into that role full time.
Yeah. So your financial concerns are valid, but I wouldn't care. Because if you extend Damian Lillard to the extent that you did in 2019, what was that? There was a four-year 195?
Yeah, 196, I want to say.
196, okay. If you extend him to that money, you are obviously all in, right? I mean, I think it comes with a certain responsibility afterwards. If you do that, then you should be on the hook of going, well, we're dedicating this amount of money for this guy because we believe in him. That means we have to follow up and we have to pay everyone else who we have identified as keepers. Right. We have to make sure that the guys around Dame are the right guys. And I just have nothing to point out in terms of CJ. Like, I know CJ has been in trade rumors for so long, but I always found it so frustrating because he's extremely productive. Like, you have that number two guy right there. He also has the trust of Dame, which matters. Like, if you're flipping him out, somewhere else, what does that do to Dame and his trust in the franchise as well? Mm-hmm. You have to ask these questions. Furthermore, Robert Covington was supposed to be that wing. You know, we're still talking about that wing need, even though they traded for him the last offseason, and he was supposed to be the fix. So, you know, what if you trade McCollum for a wing and that player is not the fix? Yeah. Then what? Then you're out McCollum, who is, again, 27 points, 5 assists, 44% from downtown. Now you're even weaker then. Maybe just make sure that you keep the players around who you know are productive. Because that's been such a big problem for the Blazers, is they've always taken chances. And sometimes those chances have just not panned out. Stick with what you know is basically my motto when it comes to the Blazers at this point. You know you have all-star caliber production in Dame and CJ. You know that Gary Trent Jr. is trending towards becoming a devastatingly effective two-way force. Keep those around. You know what Nurkic brings? Keep him around. You know that Cantor can be had for somewhat cheap, and when he's starting, he's essentially a double-double player.
Yeah.
I mean, keep those around and just build. And for the young guys who are still question marks, if teams are willing to take those on and pay through the nose to do so because they believe in their potential, fine. Fine. I mean, hell, even Harry Giles. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I want to make it clear. I'm not advocating that they make this move before the trade deadline, or I don't think they should. I mean, I think they should get the, I don't know if Collins is coming back this year. I don't think he is. But McCollum and Nurkic should be back, hopefully by the trade deadline or right around then.
Right.
So see what you do with this healthy team, with this version of Gary Trent. Simons has been actually looking a little bit better this lately.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, see what happens in the playoffs this year and then reevaluate from there. Because, look, there's no guarantee. I mean, if someone maxes out Gary Trent Jr. this summer, I don't think it's going to happen. But if someone throws a max offer sheet at him, Portland's probably not thrilled about that. And I don't know if they're going to match a max offer sheet for him. I feel like you should just let him walk at that point.
What's the situation? Before we answer that, like, what is the situation in Portland after Paul Allen passed? Like, who is...
Financially, you mean?
Yes.
I am not sure if they have said whether they plan on spending deep into the luxury tax or not.
All right. But, like, we agree that Paul Allen, had a substantial amount reserved for the Blazers, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And we assume that since he passed, his family or someone close to him took over, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes. So is it fair to assume that the Blazers are still financially prudent?
I don't think they're Tillman Fertitta, if that's what you're asking.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but I'm just talking from a team building perspective. If Gary Trent Jr. gets a max contract offer, you don't match that because you just say that's one less team we have to worry about. You let other teams overspend at a certain point,
right?
So,
but here's the thing: he's on the uptick, though.
I know.
So you don't know where he's going to end up at, given that he's averaging 20 points in the starting lineup and he's hitting the three ball the way that he is, and the defense is there. I mean, hell, Brian, that guy could blow up somewhere else as well.
Yeah, it would definitely be a risk. I mean, Portland should want to keep him and should try to get an extension agreed to before he even is entertaining offer sheets.
Agreed.
Because the bidding could really get out of control. But I'm saying if he got an offer sheet that they decided not to match and they had already traded CJ, then we run into problems. So I think the right play is see what happens in the off season, see if you can get Trent back at a reasonable number, and then see what happens with Zach Collins, see what happens with Derek Jones. You've got Nurkic, Covington, Hood all going into contract years at that point. I think that's when, see what happens in the playoffs this year too, that's when you can start to really evaluate, okay, what do we see Gary Trent's role in the future? Do we think he can be the starting three full time? Do we think he could be a replacement for CJ? Is there a disgruntled wing out on the market somewhere who we think we could flip CJ for this player and it would make sense for both teams? I don't know, but it's something I'm just keeping in the back of my mind because, again, I don't think they do anything at the trade deadline. I don't think they should, but I feel like they're kind of approaching a fork in the road moment here in the next few months where they might have to make some bigger decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely be against it. I hear what you're saying. I would be all in on what they have and then just look to make changes in the margins and see how they can upgrade that way through. I mean, it's also just a question of time before Carmelo hangs it up, I have to assume.
That's true. Vintage Melo. Yeah.
Right, but then they're going to need another wing.
Yeah.
And Rodney Hood, he has not looked great, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. I mean, coming off the big injury, right. So.
Yeah. Are we looking at this the wrong way, though? Like, we're talking about wings and whatnot, but they're last in the NBA in assists, for example. Like, there's not a whole lot of playmaking going on. Like, it's basically Dame and CJ.
Right.
Dame at 7.2, Obviously, CJ has missed, 12 games, but he was at 5. You know, there's not a lot of playmaking going on there, which should we actually instead look to find a playmaker of some capacity instead of having that, you know, that wing, you know, defensive stopper or however you want to look at it? Should they just instead gear up on offense and just go balls to the wall with playmaking, shooting, movement, cutting, everything?
CJ for Lonzo Ball, who says no?
Oh, God. If it's CJ Ellaby, yeah, sure.
Yeah, there we go. All right, let's go on to the Sacramento Kings, Mort, who have been frisky of late. They are currently 10th in the West, but the West is just such a mess right now. I mean,
yeah,
you've got Utah and the two LA teams are clearly the three best teams in the West. Phoenix is at 15-9, and they are 5 games ahead of the 14th seed Oklahoma City Thunder at 10-15, or 5.5 games ahead. So it's like 1, 2, or 3 game losing streak or 1, 2, or 3 game winning streak, and you can jump from 10 to 5, basically. It's right. Wild. So, I mean, right now the Kings are tied in terms of games back with the Mavericks and the Grizzlies for the number 9 seed in the West. And they've got some interesting names, I think, if we want to talk about them heading into the trade deadline.
Agreed.
The first guy, I think there's two tiers of players that we need to hit with them. There's the veterans who clearly, if they can dump them for any assets, they will. But I think we should start with Harrison Barnes, who has been very good for them this year. He's on our favorite type of contract, the Aaron Gordon-esque contract, where it descends every year. So he's owed 22.2 this year, 20.3 next year, 18.4 in 2022-23. What would you do if you're the Kings and someone comes calling about Harrison Barnes?
Yeah, so I would definitely listen, because he's having one of those seasons where I think you need to capitalize on his trade value as it is. Obviously, you know, and this is kind of important. You and I are not privy to what his trade value is inside the NPA. We can only, you know, make an educated guess based on how he's producing, based on where the market is going. But you have to assume, given his uptick in production, his uptick in efficiency, you know, that his trade value is higher now than it was last year, especially mm-hmm. considering, like you already mentioned, the declining contract. You have to assume there should be a fairly decent market out there for Harrison Barnes that should be stronger this year than it was last year. And as such, yes, you need to look at it, and you need to figure out where you want to go. If you are getting offers that are just, you know, not really worth doing, of course you shouldn't feel pressured into just trading him for whatever. I think there is this component of basically gauging what is he most valuable to us? Is he most valuable to us as a player or as a trade chip? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're just going to come down on the side that's largest, right? If he's better as a player than what the return is, keep him, because there's no fault in hanging on to a good player. There's never a problem in hanging on to talent. Right. But if you're getting someone in there who goes, you know what, we'll give you a first-round pick, and with only very light protection, like, you know, top 5 protection or something,
mm-hmm.
I would listen. I would listen a lot. And maybe it's, look, again, this is what I'm saying. I'm not privy to his trade value. Maybe his trade value right now is more than that. I don't know. But I would listen. I would absolutely listen.
Yeah, he's definitely not a player. He's not good enough for you just to hang up any call you get about him. But
oh, no.
But you're right. They are no under no immediate pressure to trade him. And I think for the Kings, they have to weigh. I mean, this is, you know, a franchise that has been mediocre for so long that they're chasing that elusive playoff berth and to get their young guys that experience. And Harrison Barnes plays a really important role on this team because he's really the only guy to fill that swing forward role.
Yeah.
I mean, they have know, a great backcourt with De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, and then Tyrese Halliburton off the bench, and they, like the Blazers that we just talked about, when it's Dame, CJ, Gary Trent, you put those three on the floor together, and it, I mean, you know, they played the Sixers on Tuesday night and hit every damn shot they took in the second quarter. It was ridiculous how offensively potent they were. But other than Harrison Barnes, like, look at their depth chart at forward, and it gets really bleak very quickly. I mean, you have Marvin Bagley, but he can't play the switchy role, right? If he's going to switch, it's between power forward and center. He's not switching between small and power forward. Otherwise, it's like Glenn Robinson III, who I like, but he's just, you know, very much a role player, and like 3-and-D guy is stretching the limits of what he could do. He's streaky on both ends of the court.
Agreed.
You know, so I think for the Kings, you have to weigh, do we want to just chase this playoff berth, or like chase the spot in the play-in tournament, because that's probably more realistically what they're looking at, and then we can reconsider flipping Barnes this offseason or next season. Again, he's still got 2 years left on the deal, so there's no immediate pressure. But, you know, for a team like Boston, I think he's probably... I think, you know, with that giant trade exception, that every... You know, Boston's going to be monitoring every guy on the trade market, basically, because they don't have to match salaries. I think it's between Barnes and Vucevic in terms of who should be at the top of their leaderboard for these are the guys we really want to go after.
I actually like that idea of Barnes in Boston.
I mean, you put it's similar to what they would have had when Hayward was there, where you've got Brown, Tatum, and Harrison Barnes, and I don't care who's playing the 2, 3, or 4. It does not matter at all. It's three completely interchangeable wings.
Yeah, I would. Well, sure, to some extent, I wouldn't want Harrison Barnes to switch down and guard like a CJ McCollum or a Zach LaVine.
Yeah, that's true.
But I definitely think you're right in terms of you can ask Jalen and Jason to do those things, and then Barnes would just take, you know, the weakest, I think, opponent wing that or forward that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, it'd be potent as hell.
Yeah.
It'll be really potent.
Harry is shooting 41.3 from three this year.
Yeah, 85 from the line, 49 overall. You know, he's been efficient. And, you know, it should be noted he's playing with De'Aaron Fox, who's having just a hell of a year. And I think for him to have that attention, Fox that is, defensively, has benefited Barnes. You know, Hield is still there. He's jacking up a lot of threes. I know that he's been struggling overall from the field, but teams are still running out to guard him. Like, just because he's shooting 37% from the field overall, it does not change the way defenses look at him. He's still on the scouting report.
Yes.
And fairly so. And now you just imagine Barnes going to Boston, where you have, I would argue, two drastically better offensive options in Tatum and Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And that efficiency theoretically should transfer over and maybe even improve.
Yeah. So what do you think is fair value for Barnes, or like what should the Kings want in return for him, given his importance to their team, given how much I'm presuming they're valuing making the playoffs? What should be
at least
any sort of protection on it? Like, should they do it for a lottery protected first?
I don't think I would do a lottery protected, honestly.
I mean, but for again, Boston, there's probably no risk in just, you know, you could top three protect it, but...
Yeah. That's like, the thing. For No, you if it's Boston specifically, you would have to add in something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like Aaron Nesmith?
Yeah, want to just pick your underachieving young guy from the last couple of years?
Yeah. Boston's fans are like, no! I mean, last time we did a pod and I brought up Aaron Nesmith as a trade candidate, I had a couple Boston fans on Twitter basically saying, no, we love him, which was super weird because he's basically not done anything.
Right.
But I mean, that aside, I think you got to go like Nesmith, and then, Yeah, they're first, wherever it lands. I don't have Tankathon open. I don't know where they are right now. 20s?
Yeah. Yeah. I would assume so. Well, maybe. Yeah, probably, because... again,
19, oh, so close.
Yeah, well, the standings are goofy,
right? And they would get significantly better by getting Harry B. So
yeah,
so you would assume mid 20s or something along those lines. So if you get a first round draft pick, let's say it's 25, and you get Aaron Nesmith, is that enough? I think it's close. I don't know if Sacramento would want a little bit extra.
I think they might. I think they're going to hold out for a ransom. Not like a Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday right. ransom. Like, I'm not talking three firsts and two swaps or whatever. But, again, just given their desperation to make the playoffs and given how much Barnes means to them, I don't think... Like, I don't know if one first would be enough. I don't even know if one first and Nesmith would be enough.
It's a fair point. It might not be. And you're right. They are desperate to make the playoffs, which... Maybe because of that, they're just not taking calls on Barnes.
Yeah.
Now, I think they're just going, we want to actually make the playoffs, so let's get the veterans in. Maybe they're actually considering pivoting away from Marvin Bagley because he's so young and still somewhat raw and trying to capitalize on that. Nothing would shock me is kind of my point here because it's the Kings.
Right. Now, I do think they're willing to pivot off of Nemanja Bjelica.
Yeah,
who has not played very much this year and has been in trade rumors. I know Sam Amick of The Athletic had a report about it this week as well. And then Corey Joseph is the other guy who wouldn't shock me if they're at least willing to move. You know, I don't think they're asking a ton for him, or I can't imagine they are. He's got one more year on his deal. It's partially guaranteed, but he's... You know, he's shooting only 29.2 from three, averaging six points, 2.5 assists per game. Like
he's overpaid. He's very overpaid.
Yeah, I mean, he is their primary backup point guard, so they would need, if they're flipping either of those guys, they would need to address that somehow, I would think, unless they're just ready to turn the second unit over to Tyrese Halliburton, which would actually be pretty fun. But yeah, I would think both of those guys are... I don't think Bjelica is staying in Sacramento beyond March 25th, and I would not be surprised if Corey Joseph is also on the move within the next month.
Yeah. I would agree.
So which teams do you think should be after those guys?
Well, I think Boston is a good one, honestly, in terms of Barnes. Maybe the Bulls?
Ooh.
Well, I'm just thinking out loud because here, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before. You know, Markkanen is going to be a restricted free agent. I think his days in Chicago are numbered, so I wouldn't be shocked if they traded him. So just to get out of all that scenario, you know, the whole restricted free agency nonsense. And it would make sense, right, to have, you know, Patrick Williams and Harrison Barnes like as a both combo forwards, new age positions wise, play those spots, right?
Yeah.
It would have to be Otto Porter for salary matching. And then Markkanen, I guess? I don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, because the Kings would have to pay him. But that's interesting. They could take a flyer on a younger guy, like a... Yeah, a guy in Markkanen who's a lot younger could fit with that timeline a little bit better, and I could see the Markkanen-Bagley pairing. I was about to say, I can see it working well on offense, maybe not defense.
Right, right. I don't know. But I think they need something there. What else? Like, who else? Because it has to be realistic. Like we've talked about so many times before, trying to send guys to contenders... It's just going to be tricky now because most contenders don't have a lot of draft picks. They already used up most of their assets in general, meaning also young guys. And so you have to look at like the tier below, I feel like.
Right. So there are a couple teams that jump to mind for Barnes. And I might be totally off base here, but what about Miami?
That could be interesting. Portland, too, actually. We just talked about them, but he would be a good wing there.
Yeah. Miami just always is going to come to mind because they have so many potentially expiring contracts, and they have, you know, the Hero, Achua, Kendrick Nung, Duncan Robinson.
Oh, yeah, but not Hero, right?
No, no,
you're not. No, okay.
Yeah, but the, and probably not even Duncan Robinson, honestly. But, like, Achua and whatever expiring you needed.
Yeah. Is that enough for the Kings, though?
Yeah, Miami is limited in terms of how many firsts they can send out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm talking about. So, and I actually wrote about this for Forbes as well, just in terms of how weird this trade deadline can be. You know, teams use draft picks to sort of like fill in the blanks.
Right.
You know, teams have a different understanding or a different value of certain guys. So when they start to talk trade, you know, two guys' value might not really align. And then they kind of go, okay, let's see if we can agree on a different scenario here. If you and I agree that these two are not exactly the same, then let's one of us add a pick of some variety to even the balance. And if those picks are not there, it's going to make it so much more difficult to even the balance and yeah. even the scales. So for it seems like Miami or the Lakers or the Clippers for that matter, I mean, it's just not going to be easy. Oh man, the Clippers, Harrison Barnes instead of Marcus Morris.
Yeah, that would be they came to mind, but it was just like burned through everything to get Kawhi and Paul George.
Right, I have no idea what they can give up.
The other team that came to mind, I'm surprised you didn't bring them up because you always try to get a power forward to them, the Denver Nuggets.
No, well, there's a reason I'm not trying to get Harry B to Denver, and that's because I'm waiting out to see what's going to happen with Aaron Gordon.
Okay.
In Orlando.
Fair enough. But they do have, I think it probably Will Barton going out, because I don't think Gary Harris is going to have any interest to Sacramento. And then they could include, sorry Nuggets fans, but they could include Campazzo or Monte Morris.
Yeah.
To fill that backup point guard spot as well. Or you
is
know.
That enough? Again, I had to, is that enough for Harrison Barnes? I do agree with you that Harrison Barnes on Denver alongside Jokic would be so fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there should be a number of teams inquiring about Barnes. Whether any of them offer enough is the bigger question. And I think the Kings would be right to demand, you know, more than just one protected first round pick for him, which I would not have foreseen saying before the start of this year.
No, I mean, it just really goes to show how valuable forwards, versatile forwards, you know, have become in this league. That's also why, Brian, I was never that critical of the Tobias Harris contract, even though I know it's overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just perfect for this, the way that the NBA game is played right now.
And I wonder if that influences, I mean, I guess we kind of saw it this year with Patrick Williams going number four, but I wonder if teams start picking guys in that archetype higher than you otherwise might expect.
Absolutely. So right now, right? Jonathan Kuminga has only played like two games with the G League Ignite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely guarantee you there are certain teams in the league who would take him second after Kate Cunningham.
Wow.
Absolutely. I guarantee you that. Even if Jalen Suggs and Evan Mobley have played great in college, just because of Kuminga's ability to be like a proper wing and handle the basketball and make plays with the ball in his hands at that size, I guarantee you someone has him second on their board.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I actually think I said this before last draft, that we are going to see this, that the wings are definitely going to be more prioritized.
Right. Well, I mean, they're just becoming increasingly more important, and there are so many good young guards / wings that if you have someone to shut down, you know, not even a Kawhi or a LeBron who are,
right,
in theory, toward the back end of their career rather than the front. But you know, you're going to have to deal with someone like Jason Tatum for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's going to be that Celtics team, as bad as they've looked at times this year, they're going to be good as long as Brown and Tatum are there. They're both going to be there for a long time. So you need to prioritize getting guys who can either go shot for shot with them or harass them to some extent, slow them down a little bit.
And preferably both.
Preferably both, yeah. So before we move on from the Kings, any potential landing spots for either Bielitsa or Corey Joseph?
No, not to Corey Joseph. No, I actually like the guy. I'm not trying to be a dick, but his contract is really bad. I understand it's only partially guaranteed next year, which is definitely helping his case.
Yeah.
But $12.5 million this year, I mean, it's a lot of money, and you just have to, I guess, gauge whether you want to occupy that cap space for someone like Corey Joseph.
Right. It's hard to match salary for him, for any contender to match salary for him. So, yeah, I agree. That would be tough.
Bielitsa, though, he should have interest around the league, whatever happens. I wonder if it's a buyout situation or they actually end up trading him. Regardless, he's a superbly smart player. He shoots the ball. He's aggressive. I wouldn't be shocked to see Denver actually get in on this.
I could see that, yeah. I know he's come up a couple times now in connection with the Sixers, and they have that big trade exception from, I think it's from the Horford deal, so he would fit into it. And, you know, Doc Rivers has been, not as much recently, but for like the 2 weeks prior to this one, like every single press conference he was bemoaning their lack of depth at the four with Mike Scott hurt. I think his one of Ben or Tobias kept getting into early foul trouble, and he was just like every game so mad about it. So yeah, he's a guy. He's one of the guys for the Sixers in particular that I'm keeping my eye on heading into the deadline. Whether it's a trade or, I mean, I think they would love for it to be a buyout, but you know, they could squeeze him into that trade exception as well.
Yeah, and you know, again, there is a market, so I have to assume the Kings are looking at it as well. We might as well get something in return.
Right. So let's go to the Oklahoma City Thunder, Mort, who we thought would be one of the worst teams in the league this year when they traded away, you know, all of their good players in the past 2 years. And despite their best efforts to tank, they're still too good. I mean, technically they're 14th in the East or the West right now. But again, the West is super cluttered. Like, they're, you know, two games out of ninth. So it's not, they're not facing a huge deficit at the moment. They've got a couple guys. They're like Sacramento, where they've got one big contract and then a couple small guys on, or a couple veterans on smaller deals, who I think it's pretty obvious if they can move them, they will. The one guy on the big contract, of course, is Al Horford, who is putting up a traditional Al Horford line this year, although, of course, he's shooting 40.4 from three. Second he leaves Philly, he remembers how to shoot again. But he's been playing pretty well. And again, I hate to keep hammering Boston here, but they have that big trade exception. Could he be a fit for what they need?
He's been there before. He knows the system. He knows the coaching staff. He knows the teammates there. He would fit in seamlessly.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's... That's the most likely landing spot if they are going to trade him, if the Thunder are going to trade him, because, again, he's getting $27.5 million this year, so it's just extremely tough. It's not like the Nets, you know, the Nets need a big, of course, and I'm sure they would love to add Al Horford, who would actually be potentially a very good fit there. But, you know, unless they're trading DeAndre Jordan plus Spencer Dinwiddie, which I don't think they would be willing to do, given DeAndre's ties to Kyrie and KD, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, you're probably looking at bust it or bust to get Horford out of there this year. But, I mean, OKC also might not be in immediate rush to move him. Like, I know...
I don't think they are. I don't think they are at all.
I don't think they necessarily should be. Because he's been rehabbing his value... Well, his contract goes down a little bit. It's not like a Harry B deal where it's losing $2 million a year, but it goes to 27 next year and then 26.5 the following year, and that's only partially guaranteed. It's 14.5 guaranteed. Gets more guaranteed if they make the finals or win a championship, which I do not think will be a concern for OKC in the next 2 years. So that's the big guy, the guy on a big contract. They also have Trevor Ariza, who is just in trade purgatory, like Andre Iguodala was last year with Memphis. He's just not playing. They're like, don't even report to this team. We'll just buy you out if we don't trade you. We have George Hill, who is earning $9.6 million this year, almost a little over $10 million next year, although only 1.3 of that is guaranteed.
Yeah, he's essentially an expiring.
Yeah, and then Mike Muscala as well. So I think all of those guys will be available. It's just a matter of finding a fit for them. So are there any teams that come to mind, Mort, in terms of any of those guys who you think could be a fit, or would be a, like, would Trevor Ariza be the missing piece for some team out there?
Oh, boy. No, not the missing piece. I don't think so. I think you could say that about Al Horford for Boston, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
If we just keep it into that vein. Because the thing about Horford is he's so easy to integrate as long as he's not playing for the Philadelphia 76ers.
He's not playing next to three other power forwards and centers. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So he's a plug-and-play guy in the sense that you can put him in. He can shoot open shots. He can make the right reads. He's defensively effective. You know, he just knows his role. He's not going to overtake anything. I think Boston is a very interesting candidate there. I think for them, it's a matter of what do we really want to do, right? Do we want to go back to having, you know, a permanent center, or do we like the whole positionless wing thing and, like, instead go for Harrison Barnes? Or for hell, like, even if they go with the whole ideology of having a center, if Nikola Vucevic is on the market, then you kind of have to go, well, what do we like here? Do we want a guy like Al Horford who defensively is far superior? Or do we want a Vucevic who offensively can give us a whole lot more, which they might not even need? So it becomes this dance, again, of figuring out what do we have? What do we need? Can we get this done? And what are our ambitions for this year? Because Kemba's knee is, you know, not really totally reliable. So it, if, you know, there's so many open questions here. You know, what are their expectations for this year? If it's the title, I think Al Horford might be the play.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm trying to find Ariza destiny. I mean, I think every team is going to hold out and hope Ariza just gets bought out, and then he'll go to the contender of your choosing. But I'm wondering if some team should be more aggressive in terms of acquiring him. And the one team that comes to mind, honestly, is Portland, because we've seen him play really well there in the past.
Yeah.
But it's...
for Derek Jones Jr.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And then whatever else you need to include to make the salaries match.
I actually like that. Well, Derek Jones is like, what, 9.5?
Yeah, he's 9.3. And then Ariza... oh, yeah, that actually should work then.
Yeah, it should
work. He's 12.8, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like that one, straight up.
Yeah, I mean, it might be an interesting gamble for both sides. Like, if Portland thinks Derek Jones is either declining the player option and going to test free agency this summer, or they're just like, all right, this didn't work out as we thought it would. We don't want him to pick up the $9.7 million player option because we don't want him on our books next year. You flip him for Ariza's expiring, you know, and Ariza Covington, that's actually pretty solid defensively until McCollum comes back, and then you know, you've got another wing defender off the bench, assuming you're doing Dame, CJ, Gary Trent, Cov, Nurkic, 1 through 5.
Yeah. I would agree. That I kind of like that one. Seriously, just a reason for Derek Jones Jr. straight up.
Yeah, and then, you know, OKC should be in the mindset of we're just accumulating as much young talent as we can, and we're just going to throw them all together and see which pieces work. with SGA.
And he's 24 in a couple days. Right. So that's still young. Yeah.
Yeah. George Hill's the other one. I mean, he could really help a team. But again, it's at $9.6 million. Then we start to get into the territory of, okay, like, sure, the Clippers really want another point guard. But who do they have at 9.6 to give up to match salary for him?
Yeah. And that was what I said earlier. You know, it is just so difficult to find those right contracts for the contenders because they just don't have those available assets. There's a part of me that wants actually to send Paul George to the Spurs because
George Hill, you mean?
George Hill, sorry.
Okay. It's like, yeah. Paul, I'm sure the Spurs would happily take Paul George too.
Definitely. George Hill. I apologize. Yeah. That's, no, yes. Because Pop loved him. He was one of Pop's favorite players. And it's been a decade or so since he left. I would love to see him go back to the Spurs and act as a mentor to all their young guys.
That could be cool.
I don't know what the trade is, though.
Right. They have so many expirings. They have all of the expirings, but
right,
you know, I don't think OKC has any interest in any of those guys because they're all above 30 and they all wouldn't really fit into the picture. And then, like, I guess you could do Jakob Poeltl.
Oh, but the Spurs love him.
Yeah,
like, a lot. I don't think they would do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I don't know if. I mean, they're pretty well set in the backcourt already, so I don't know.
Yeah, this would have to be one of those, you know, mentorship things. But then again, you also have to ask yourself, what does George Hill want?
Right.
Like, if he doesn't want to be the whole mentor thing, he wants to win, you know, then what are you looking at? Are you looking at a buyout? I mean, again, this year is so weird. Because there's just so there are not those assets available. I agree with you that if he got a buyout, he goes to the Clippers. Like I cannot imagine any other destination, right?
Probably. I mean, I don't know if he's in just full ring chasing mode, just go to the Lakers, right? Like the Lakers are clearly the best team in the NBA.
That's true.
Despite
if he just wants the ring,
the best record, but.
No, yeah. You're right. If the ring is an fair, if that's what he wants, absolutely, you're right. And it's the Lakers. They have a spot there.
Yeah.
They can certainly give him minutes. I don't see why they wouldn't.
I mean, I guess Utah could be interesting as well. He played there for one season, and you know, having that playmaking off the bench next to Jordan Clarkson would be it's possible. The team, I mean, I think, again, this is a situation where you would love for him to get bought out, but I just don't see OKC's incentive to do so. So I think if you want him, you're going to have to trade for him. The one team that I wonder about is the Orlando Magic, just because they are so beaten up, especially at point guard.
Why would you do that to George Hill, though? Poor guy. Come on.
I know, but, you know... And the problem is assembling the trade, as always. But if the Magic are just giving up on Mo Bamba, like, if they just aren't going to give him minutes, like, try to flip Bamba to OKC, get George Hill back, and then make OKC give up one of its 17 million picks.
Yeah.
Like, you're addressing... You're addressing a need at point guard that is outrageous right now. And, you know, you don't have to keep him. Again, it's $1.3 million on the books next year. So if Markelle Fultz is back and ready to go, and, you know, you got Cole Anthony, Michael Carter-Williams, like, you can let him go after this year and only eat $1 million. So it's not that big of a deal. But this will at least help you stay afloat in the meantime. And if you can... I mean, really, it would be, you know, acquiring a need... And, you know, I don't think they want to give up on Bamba, but at a certain point, it's like, you're rapidly approaching the time you need to make a decision on this guy. We just don't have a ton of data about him.
What about a deal centered around Mike Scott, Tony Bradley, and draft compensation.
Yeah, I'm 100%. George Hill might be the number one guy on my Sixers trade deadline. It's between him, Bielitsa, and Wayne Ellington. Or like if they can acquire any of those guys, I'm super in. Or Mike Muscala. Yeah. Sleeper agent Mike Muscala.
If you could get George Hill and Bielitsa, like both of them,
mm-hmm.
then I don't really care if you sacrifice the rest of your debt.
And I don't even know if they would be. Because, I mean, if you're getting... Like, I think George Hill would be important because the bench right now, you're relying so much on Shake Milton's playmaking, and Shake's been banged up this year. You know, they missed him on Thursday. And, like, I love Tyrese Maxey. I really believe in the kid's potential, and I think he's going to turn into something very good. But I don't...
He's suffering from Kobe White syndrome.
Well, yeah, he's just... He can't play the full-time playmaker role. He's just in over his head at the moment, and that's okay. He's a rookie in a weird season. I'm not... You know, I don't... Again, it's not speaking to anything about his long-term upside. It's just...
But he's not that guy. He's not necessarily a set-the-table point guard.
Right, and I think, you know, having George Hill's playmaking in that second unit, and his shooting, of course, you know, like, he shot 46 from three last year, and he's at 38.6 this year. I don't know. I think he would... I think, given their needs and what he would bring to the table... I mean, Portland's another one. You know, if they're not getting...
Simons?
Yeah, if they're not getting Ariza, or send both somehow, I don't care.
Oh, extend the trade. Yeah, expand the trade.
Or, I mean, Derek Jones for George Hill works straight up as well.
Yeah, no, but if they trade Derek Jones Jr., they would need a wing back. They already have so many guards. I think you need to make that Ariza, but you can expand the trade.
Yeah, well, it's getting tough with salaries, but...
Well, then you include a third team.
Yeah, or just hope. Make it conditional on the trade that you will buy out Trevor Ariza and he will sign with us.
Yeah, something like that. It's totally illegal, but fine.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, I think Philly and Portland should be the two teams really, really after George Hill. And the Clippers, if they could make the salary work, it's just tough unless, I mean, I don't know if they're giving up Lou Williams for him, and I don't know why OKC would want Lou Williams anyway.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. Again, this is the difficult thing. I mean, it is going to be a tricky trade deadline, and I actually suspect that because of that, several contenders are just not going to be active on March 25th.
Yeah. Or they're just going to be, you know, be saving their bullets for the buyouts. They're going to hope that teams aren't active, and then you find an OKC where they're like, well, what are we doing with Trevor Ariza still on our roster on March 26th?
Yeah. And then we're seeing all this, and then on March 25th, Vogue comes out with some bomb that says, well, Anthony Davis has been traded for Joel Embiid. Like,
oh my god, that would be my actual nightmare. Please no.
Could you imagine both Sixers and Lakers Twitter just going crazy for 24 hours? The site would lock down.
I'm going to bring my computer to the hospital. That's all I'm saying. If we have to do an emergency podcast. All right. Let's turn to the Houston Rockets. Where again, it's a similar situation. You got a guy on a big contract. Really, two guys on a big contract that I think they'd be willing to at least entertain offers on. And then one guy who definitely does not seem long for the Houston Rockets. So let's start with Victor Oladipo, who is in the final year of his deal. He's at $21 million. He'll be a free agent this summer. They got him in that four-team Harden mega trade. What do you think the Rockets should do with Oladipo moving forward? Do you think he should be a part of their long-term future and they should be willing to go in the summer and say, we want to re-sign you? Or should they be at least entertaining offers and say, you know, we got you in this Harden deal and now we're going to flip you for whatever value we can get?
You should have an open mind to both those scenarios. I think if the price is right for Oladipo, you can hang on to him. Mm-hmm. I suspect the price won't be right in the mind of Oladipo.
Right, right.
I think he's going to ask for, well, let's just say it, more than he's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means, you know, the Rockets are going to say no thank you to paying him $25 million a year, I think that would be wise. And if they could get something for him now, if they, you know, anticipate the situation unfolding, why not? I think the question for me is, as well, what kind of team are they looking to actually build? Because they are, according to Basketball Reference, they're second in the league in defensive efficiency.
Yeah, I think they're... I haven't checked in the last couple of days, but I believe since Harden left, since the guy who actively didn't give a damn about playing basketball for the first 8 games, since he left, I believe they're first in the league.
So, again, if you want to build up an identity around defense, then you would kind of want to pay Oladipo, because then he's an asset. And then, but of course, you also have to wonder, you know, is his offensive production, can that bounce back from where it is? Like right now, he's shooting 38% from the field, under 30% from downtown, only 75% from the line. He's not giving you a ton of playmaking. Like I don't want to say he's just there, because that does feel like he's more than just there, but he's not the Victor Oladipo from the very famous, what was it, 2017-2018 season.
Right.
And I don't think he will be again, offensively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you want to retain him, you can. If the idea is let's go all in on defense, and then you just have to work around that and figure out what is fair compensation, how do we build around a core of him, John Wall and Christian Wood. I mean, they're between 25 and 30, so you kind of need to go quickly to land a winner, if you catch what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Gordon is there as well, but he's 32. It's a weird team. You can kind of go in, you can pivot into both directions. You can go into the win now thing and defense and all that, or you can pivot into the Christian Wood era and try to get a little bit younger. They have some options here. I don't know what's best for them overall. I kind of like the Christian Wood pathway, but then we're going to be seeing a significantly worse defense.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a really good question. What is Oladipo earning right now? Is he in enough? Let's see.
21 flat.
Oh, Boston. Here we are again.
Yep. I think that the tricky thing with Oladipo especially is the team that acquires him has to be willing to re-sign him at whatever price they expect him to command this summer.
Well, I mean, sure, but if the entire league is in agreement, then nobody's going to offer him 25
a year. What are the odds that the entire league is in agreement on that? Keep in mind, Gordon Hayward just got 4 years, $120 million in a summer where no teams had cap space.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. And you know, we kind of just cast that away as Mike being Mike, you know, a bad owner. But you're right. It only takes one team.
Yeah.
It takes one team to mess it all up. And it's annoying because I kind of want him there. I kind of want to see what this team could be defensively.
In Houston or Boston?
Oh, both, actually. But like, right now we're talking about Houston.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see what this could turn into. But also, if I'm Houston, I'm not paying the guy $25 million. I'm just not. I'm not going out there and I'm getting ready to max him or anything. I'm not, because then I'm in a very, very tough situation financially. And knowing Tillman Fertitta, that's probably already the case.
Right. I mean, if anything, I think years are going to be more of a concern than the size of the contract.
Oh, but so, he wants the full four, right?
Or we would assume.
Five maybe, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, if he wanted 5 $125 million, I would get nervous. I would be more willing to do 260 than I would 5 $125 million.
Yeah. No, for sure. Because that's just so short term.
Yeah.
and you can move it if he's playing just decently. So, no, I would be down for that. Yeah. But would he go for that? I don't know, because that injury was brutal, and he just has not played a whole lot. He really has. Like, last year, he played, was it 19 games?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And it's been 20 this year, and then 36 the year before that when he went down. That's not a lot of games.
No.
And you want to make sure that you get a guy who is healthy, who's able to stay on the court. He's just such a question mark for me. That's why I kind of want him in Boston as well. I'm in two camps here. Because if he's in Boston, yes, you could argue if he goes down, but he's acquired via the TPE and just, you know, some draft compensation, some of the young guys who aren't necessarily, you know, world beaters.
Mm-hmm.
Have you really lost that much? I don't think you have. But in case he's healthy and he's a game changer defensively, like, he could be that missing link or the last, you know, the thing that gives them over the hump or whatever catchphrase you want to use there.
Yeah.
Like, he could get them to the finals is my point.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and you're offering Tillman Fertitta salary relief. So
immediate salary.
that might be more valuable to him than any draft pick. No, it's a good question because, I mean, yeah, again, it's just, if you're acquiring him and giving up considerable assets, like if it's a Andre Drummond situation from last year where you're trading like a bad expiring contract and a second round pick for him, no risk. That's cool. Yeah. Like, right. All right, no big deal if you lose him. But yeah, if you're giving up, you know, a first and a young player or whatever, a good player for him, then you have to start really considering, is this actually worth it? And maybe it is for some team, but I think...
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I would be reluctant. But I think Houston should be taking offers because, I mean, he left Thursday's game with a foot injury. I haven't seen anything. I mean, hopefully it's just like a sprained ankle or something like that. I haven't seen any updates to suggest something more ominous. But, you know, this thing could come off the rails pretty quickly if both him and Christian Wood are out for even the next week or two.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's like right now Houston is 13th at 11-14. If they've lost four in a row, if they keep, until Christian Wood comes back, if they keep losing games, they could fall out of this thing pretty fast. So they're a team I'm keeping my eye on heading into the trade deadline. The other, I mean, I think they would love to move Eric Gordon's contract if they could, but there's just so much left on it that it's going to be tough to move and get. Like, I think you'll have to give up value to get him. I don't think you're getting anything for him. Like, you're not getting a first-round pick for him.
Right. Can we just talk about Eric Gordon here? Because I think we need to clear something up. He was so bad over the past couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's having a bounce back year, which,
yeah,
good for him. Objective. Yep. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I mean, that's good for him. And I've seen that the tide has turned in terms of him having like positive trade value in perspective of Houston fans.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to do this. I don't want to go, oh, silly Houston fans. I don't want to do that. But look, it's been 20 games of good play. That's great. That is great. Like, good for him. I hope it continues. I genuinely do. But you cannot take a 20-game sample size and then just say, well, the last 2 years didn't happen.
Right.
You can't apply that. And the fact that he still has, like you said, so much money on the books moving forward.
Yeah.
He is still a negative asset right now.
Yeah.
He has not yet reached that point where you've seen this production from him consistently over, what, 70 games or a year and a half or whatever have you, to the point where you go, oh, yeah, he's back to where he used to be. I feel good about it.
Right. I mean, maybe you could flip him for a Gary Harris type who is on a similar contract and shows flashes at times, but also has just been so inconsistent lately. And at least, you know, Gary Harris is younger than Eric Gordon. And Eric Gordon is playing better than Gary Harris this year. So maybe it's a trade that helps both sides in that regard. But yeah, I don't think you're getting a first round pick for Eric Gordon at this point.
Right. He's got 2 years left, right? Like the last year in 2023, 2024 is non-guaranteed if memory serves.
Yeah. Or
is it partially guaranteed or fully non-guaranteed?
It looks like I'm reading this from Basketball Reference that there is a ridiculous condition on it. It's guarantees in full on June 28th, 2023, or if he's named an All-Star, or if the team wins a championship before the 23-24 season, provided he plays at least 500 regular season minutes or in 750 minutes combined over the regular and postseason. So currently, it would appear to be not guaranteed.
Okay.
And I don't
that
think...
That helps?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it does.
Yeah, but it's still not great. I mean, $18.2 million next year. The year after that, $19.5 million, at which point he'll be 34.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love that. I really don't.
Yeah. So, like, I'm sure they will take offers if some team thinks Eric Gordon can be the missing piece. Like, if Boston says we're coming with that TPE.
Eric Gordon being the missing piece. My God, that 20-game sample size have really gone to our heads. Okay, yeah.
Maybe Miami. They want Eric Gordon as their... If they can't have Victor Oladipo, they'll go for Eric Gordon instead.
Let's give up Tyler Hero for Eric Gordon. Let's go all in. I believe in the 20 games.
Well, so the last guy for Houston, PJ Tucker, who has been famously frustrated with, he wanted an extension and they just didn't give it to him. He's 35. He has just no place on this team moving forward.
Yeah. Trade him for what you can. He's 175 years old. Get, take what you can.
So I think Windhorst said they want either a first or 3 seconds. And he was like, I've never heard a team make that math before. So that's interesting. But do you think they're going to be able to get a first for PJ Tucker?
I mean, look, good on you, Houston, for setting the bar high. If you do that, you know what? I will applaud you. That would be fantastic. Go, believe in yourself, Houston Rockets. It's good to have confidence. I almost hope you do, just because I think that's. That would be a great story to tell your grandkids, because that would be one of those things you will never forget. No, I would not give up a first rounder for PJ Tucker. Are you kidding me? He's good. Like, don't make the mistake. I'm not sitting here trashing PJ as a player.
Right.
He is good. But you are not giving up a first rounder for someone who's 35 and who plays, a spot role. He is not going to be, ultimately speaking, the guy who makes or breaks you. He's just not. I understand the defensive versatility. I truly do. But it's also reached that point where I think there's this thing where we have put PJ Tucker up on a pedestal that is a little bit too big than what it should be. If you catch my drift. When you hear like national writers or national podcasters talk about him, it's like he's the rich man's version of Draymond Green. And like, honey, no.
At least defensively.
Yeah.
No, like he's no one's good. Comparing him to offensively, I hope.
Right. But even defensively, Draymond is just, he's better. And again, defensively, he's terrific. But 35, he's not a quick guy anymore. He's still just 6'5".
Yep.
And I think he's a guy who worked so well in a system designed to Taylor Harden specifically. I wouldn't give up a first.
Would you give
a second? Sure.
Would you give up a pick swap?
Like, so it depends, right? I mean, what would I, if I sacrificed maybe 10 spots in the first round?
Well, I mean, hypothetically, whatever team is acquiring him, no rebuilding team should want a 35-year-old PJ Tucker.
Right,
we're talking about teams that have realistic aspirations for the finals this year. So, if the Nets had any first-round picks, if the Nets had a first-round pick, they might actually give up an actual first for him. But they don't even have first or pick swaps. But, Miami, if you're Miami... Oh, and this wouldn't be Like, if you're the Rockets, you don't want to pick swap this year because you're going to be worse than whatever team acquires PJ Tucker. So you want a pick right. swap in 23, 24, something like that. Would you do that if you're Miami?
No, I don't think I would. No. I look, again, I realize that I sound like I'm down on PJ. I'm really not, but he's going to be 36 in a minute.
Yep.
I just would not sacrifice that level of a future for someone 36. I have no idea how he holds up.
That's fair.
He could also leave. He's a free agent after this year.
Yep.
So I would be giving up a first rounder for someone who's about to turn 36 for what could potentially be a half year rental.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I'm sorry, and I realize there are going to be some, you know, basketball hardcores who are going to listen to this and go, well, PJ Tucker does everything that's not in the stat sheet, and you're not wrong, people. You're not wrong. But still, there is a limit on value. I am not giving up a first rounder. And here's my thinking on this as well. We have seen more than ever how late first rounders can turn into something.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Quigley was drafted 25th, right?
Yep, 25th.
Rudy Gobert, 27th. We consistently see that players drafted late can become contributors, even in weak drafts. Why the hell would I want to risk that? Especially if I'm a team that's good at drafting.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I give that up? That chance of maybe finding a young rotation player who could develop into a starter for a half-year rental of a 36-year-old PJ Tucker. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Again, it's only going to be a team that fancies itself in win-now mode, an actual right. legitimate contender this year. But at a certain point, you need to ask yourself, how close am I to the Lakers? Like, is PJ yeah. Tucker the difference between us having no chance against the Lakers and us having a realistic chance or even being favored against them?
Given that they have Anthony Davis... I don't feel confident in that PJ Tucker is the solution to figuring out Anthony Davis or LeBron James.
Right. Now, I think for a few teams, they should be interested. I think Miami should, Denver should, Philly is going to be because Daryl Morey knows PJ well.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. It might be tough to get a first. Portland could be another one, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, a first is probably a little steep for him. A pick swap, I might do, though.
Yeah, I'll say I'm also biased in the sense that I hate the idea of giving up draft picks for guys who are this close to basically retirement.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just not something... I like to think long-term. Yeah. I don't think that's a long-term play. No. I realize you can go for it for... Like, if PJ was better and he was like the guy who would just... He would take you up a notch, like a full notch. Up towards the Lakers level. Okay, fine, we could talk about it. But he's not.
Right. Yeah, I mean, depending on... I think, again, for a team like Denver or Portland, he would take them up a notch given their needs at that certain position. But does that put them on the level of the Lakers? That's what I'm not sure about, and I would argue right. no for both of them.
And as would I, yes.
All right, Mort. So that is a good place for us to wrap up. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please follow us on Twitter, @TheNBAPod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are hosted. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter, @Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.